This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. This year's measles outbreak is on the rise in the U.S. As of April 4th, 18 states, including Ohio, have reported a total of 113 cases, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's more cases than the total number reported in all of 2023. Today, we're going to talk about what's behind this increase in infections and how to keep ourselves and our families healthy. Joining me now are University of Dayton virologist Meerjendra Rajput. Thanks for being here, Meerjendra.
Thank you, Lucy, for the invitation.
And Public Health Dayton and Montgomery County Medical Director, Dr. Becky Thomas. Welcome, Dr. Thomas.
Good afternoon.
We want to get started with you, Meerjendra. Tell us about the measles. What is it and how is it transmitted?
Measles is a RNA virus, and it is very contagious virus. It is transmitted by an aerosol route. So whoever is infected with the measles, if he cough, sneeze, so the virus come in the droplet. And if someone inhale that droplet, virus enter to the body and replicate initially to the immune cells and then circulate it throughout the body and cause the disease.
Hmm. And Dr. Thomas, there's been this big increase in the number of cases in the U.S. this year. Why is that?
We're seeing a decrease in vaccination rates coming off of COVID. COVID created some pushback towards mandatory vaccinations, and that spilled over somewhat into school vaccinations, resulting in more people being susceptible to measles infections. In addition, traveling increases the risk of measles. Most measles cases are imported from areas where measles is still more common. And when those imported cases are brought back to an area where vaccination rates have dropped, the risk is increased for cases and spread.
And you mentioned that there's been this pushback or reluctance towards vaccines post-COVID. What more are you hearing from people about that? What do you think is behind that reluctance?
I think people have some vaccine fatigue. You know, they heard a lot about vaccines during COVID. There were new types of vaccines that they were not as familiar with and not quite as comfortable with, and that carried over into some reluctance for other vaccines, which have been around for a long, long time and are very, very effective and safe.
Dr. Thomas, how many cases have we seen in Ohio, and have the Ohio measles cases been concentrated in any specific areas or communities?
So we've had 5 total cases of measles in 2024 in Ohio. One was in a county in North Central Ohio, and we've had 2 in Montgomery County and 2 in Miami County. So our cases here in the southwest and west central part of the state have been combined to form an outbreak.
Hmm. And Meerjendra, what are the symptoms of measles? What should people be aware of?
So symptom of measles start with a fever. So when virus enter to the body, replicate, it produces a fever. Fever can reach maybe 104, 105 degree Fahrenheit. It is followed by 3 C's that is very important, like conjunctivitis, coryza, and cough. Coryza means redness of nose. And it run around 2 to 3 days after virus enter to the body. And there is after that, there is a small lesions underneath the buccal cavity we call Caplix spot. That is a white spot under the cheek surrounded by red lining. And then a person can have this rashes throughout the body. And rashes start generally from face, and then go to the trunk and rest of the body, lower part of the body. And
Yeah. We're talking about the recent outbreak of measles this year and how you can keep yourself and your family healthy. Do you have questions about measles? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Meerjendra, for people who get measles or are exposed to it, do symptoms always show up right away, or can you be symptom-free and spreading the virus like you can with COVID-19?
There will be symptom if a person is infected with the measles, but a person can spread the virus before having the rash, around 4 days before having the rashes, and even after recovery, like 4 days after the recovery or recovery from the rashes, person can transmit or spread the virus.
So they can, I know when people think of measles, they think of this kind of telltale rash that people get, but people can spread it before that rash shows up and even after that rash has gone away or?
Yeah, that is true. Yes. Couple of days before the rashes start and couple of days, around 4 days after rashes disappear.
Mm. Dr. Thomas, how serious can measles be?
Measles can be very serious. It is much more than just a rash. And even though those early symptoms can seem similar to a cold with conjunctivitis and cough and a runny nose, it can develop into pneumonia, which is the most common cause of hospitalization. We also see a lot of ear infections, and you can have brain swelling from it as well that can result in or long-term problems.
And Dr. Thomas, is it more serious for different age groups? I mean, is it more serious for, you know, small babies, for example, or younger children or older people?
The groups that are most at risk for complications from measles are children who are under the age of 5 years old, adults who are age 20 or older, pregnant women, and individuals who have a weakened immune system. Mm.
And you mentioned that the potential for brain swelling, can that lead to long-term problems for people who experience that serious symptom of that serious part of the illness?
It can lead to deafness and other long-term complications. There's a very rare side effect. There's a very rare complication called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. I know that's a handful of a term. It's referred to more commonly as just SSPE, but that's when you can recover from measles and not be aware that it's still affecting your brain and your neurological system. And then it can show up later, as much as 8 or 10 years later, as a serious progressive infection that can result in death, usually within 3 years. So again, that's very, very rare, but it can happen.
Oh my goodness. Meerjender, for people who get measles, what kind of impact does the virus have on their immune systems, and how long can it affect them after they recover?
So if person got the measles infection, the good thing is that they are protected almost for lifelong, because it's produced very strong immunity for the measles, but it caused the immunosuppression for rest of the pathogen. So a study has shown that if a person is recovered from the measles, their immune system is weakened. If they are pre-vaccinated or they have a memory, this memory wane, like they lose in that immunity. And this immunosuppression can last up to 1 to 2 years.
And what illnesses can people be susceptible to during that period when your immune system is weakened?
I can say most of the pathogen may be bacterial infection, viral infection. You can name like common infection like a strep throat and other infections. They are more susceptible.
Mm. I want to remind you that we're talking now about the recent outbreaks of measles this year and how you can keep yourself and your family healthy. If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Thomas, we've had a measles vaccine for many years. When is it recommended to get that vaccine?
Absolutely. So measles vaccination is recommended at 12 to 15 months, and then a second dose again at 4 to 6 years. In the state of Ohio, those two measles vaccine doses are requirements before entering kindergarten.
And when can babies or children get measles? If you're not getting the vaccine, if it's not recommended until between 12 and 15 months, Meerjender, does that mean babies are especially susceptible?
Yes, babies are susceptible because the recommended dose of vaccination is 1 year, like 12 months to 15 months, first dose. between before, like after delivery to the first year, they are susceptible. Maybe early months, they are protected by maternal immunity, the passive immunity that mother provide. But later part of the first year is more susceptible when this maternal immunity reduces.
And that maternal immunity would assume that the mother has either had measles and recovered or had the vaccine, right?
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. So how important is it for family members to get vaccinated if make sure they're vaccinated if they're going to be around small babies?
Yes, it is very important, because family member can spread if they are not vaccinated and infected. And small kids are very, very susceptible. So it is our responsibility, the adult people, they have to have a vaccine to protect the kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Michael, thank you so much for calling. What is your question?
My question is, I'm 75, so I was heavily vaccinated back in the 1950s. Am I covered for measles, mumps, chickenpox, all that stuff? Is that still good?
That's a great question. Dr. Thomas, what do you think?
You do have protection against measles if you were born before 1957. Before the vaccine was available, almost everyone was infected with measles. And so you're presumed to have immunity, and that immunity will last you a lifetime. So you don't need a booster dose.
Okay. What about, Michael mentioned chickenpox. I know we're not talking about chickenpox specifically today, but that vaccination wasn't developed until much later, right? I don't know if, was that developed in the 90s, Dr. Thomas? Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not sure exactly when that was developed. That sounds about the right time period.
Okay.
Most people prior to that time would have been infected and would have immunity from that. However, it's important to note with chickenpox that virus can reactivate later and cause shingles. So everyone should be vaccinated for shingles once they get to be 50 years of age or older.
Yeah. So that's the good news, Michael. You should be okay with the measles, but the chickenpox, if you haven't gotten your shingles vaccinations, you probably want to schedule those. Thanks so much for your call. We are going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll hear about two local art exhibitions that highlight women artists, past and present. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the recent measles outbreaks. My guests are University of Dayton virologist Mujendra Rajput and Public Health Dayton and Montgomery County Medical Director Dr. Becky Thomas. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mujendra, are there people who can't get the measles vaccine because of other conditions they have?
I'm not sure, but if they have a complications or underlying things, because measles is a live attenuated vaccine. So if someone is like immunocompromised, maybe pregnant, or other complication, they should not get the vaccine. And especially in the woman who is pregnant, it's not recommended because it is live attenuated vaccine cause disease.
Mm-hmm. I see. And we just talked about this with Michael, but just to underscore, if you got the measles vaccine as a kid, you don't need any kind of booster shot or anything like that, right?
It is good to get a booster. But if they are infected early in their life, they are pretty much protected rest of their life.
Okay. So if you haven't ever had the infection, but you got a measles shot when you were a kid, it might be a good idea to get a booster. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
If I could just...
Sure thing.
Jump in on that. So people who, again, we mentioned were born before 1957 are presumed to have lifelong immunity to measles. And other people who are presumed to have lifelong immunity would be people who have had a measles infection before, people who have had laboratory testing that shows that their immunity is sufficient, and people who have had measles vaccine. So if you've had two doses of measles vaccine as a child, no further testing or blood work or subsequent doses are recommended.
Okay. And Dr. Thomas Mugender was just talking about pregnant women that, or women who are, what about women who are breastfeeding? Can they get the vaccine if they haven't had it as a child, or do they need to wait until after they're breastfeeding?
I'm not aware of that being a contraindication to getting the vaccination.
Okay. Are you familiar with that, Mugender? Whether people can, women if they're breastfeeding but no longer pregnant, are they okay to get the vaccine, or is that something they should ask their doctor about?
Yeah, they should ask the doctor about. If I see the literature, literature says that after delivery, the women can get a vaccine if they are not vaccinated before.
Okay. Okay. So can you, you mentioned this a little bit before our break, Mugender, but can you talk to us about how a mother who has previously been vaccinated can pass some of that immunity to her baby? Talk to us a little bit more about that.
So if mother is vaccinated before the pregnancy, they have the immune cells or antibody, and especially antibody IgG that is neutralized the virus, it can passively transfer to the fetus, the developing baby. And when baby born, they have this passive immunity. But this passive immunity in the baby, it is not long lasting. It wane over a time. Mm-hmm. So it protect for a while, but we have to do the vaccination before completely protection gone.
Okay. And Dr. Thomas, you talked at the beginning of our conversation about vaccine hesitation and the role that's playing in the rise of some of these cases. What would your message be to people who maybe have this vaccination hesitancy or kind of just wariness or exhaustion after everything with COVID-19? What's the message from you when it comes to these vaccinations for things like measles that have been around for such a long time?
Right. So the measles vaccine has been around since 1963. This is a vaccine that has been given for decades and is very, very safe, with minimal side effects. I think as time passes, you know, from the time that measles was eliminated in the United States in 2000, and we see less of it, people tend to underestimate the risk from the disease and overestimate the risk from the vaccines. And so it's important to really pay attention to what the vaccines can protect you from. You know, I mentioned earlier about subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. That's very rare. There are other more common complications of measles, like pneumonia, that also can result in death. And I think it's important to realize that, you know, you have to be your child's advocate. Everyone wants to do the best for their child and keep their child safe. And part of that responsibility is understanding what benefits the vaccines can have and making sure that you have a trusted relationship with a doctor so that you can ask the questions that you have and get an understanding of, you know, the answers to the concerns that you have.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Thomas, do you think our awareness just generally of measles and what it's like to contract measles, these, you know, dangerous outcomes, do you think our awareness of measles as a threat has diminished over time?
I definitely think that's true for the population at large and also for the medical community. You know, older physicians have seen measles, but physicians today coming out of residency and starting out in their practice, you know, it's not as top of their mind to diagnose measles. And so it's been a learning curve, you know, to put that back into the differential now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Ginger, what are some of the common misconceptions about measles? Is it one of those things that people think, oh, you have to be a little kid to get it?
Yes. Misconception, it could be that this disease is for the kids, but it is not. It can infect the adult if they are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Thomas, is there anything you'd like to add about kind of misconceptions?
I think there's definitely a misconception that it's just a rash and nothing more. And those complications are serious and they can be real. And just to add to what we were talking about, as far as the misconception that it's just something that little kids get, you had mentioned at the top of the hour that there are 113 total cases in the United States already this year. And we know that over a quarter of those are in individuals who are age 20 and older. And I mentioned that those highest risk groups include adults that are 20 and older. And so far this year, we know that almost two-thirds of the adults that have gotten measles have ended up in the hospital. So it can definitely be very serious for individuals of all ages.
And why are adults age 20 and older such a high risk group? What makes that age group at greater risk?
I'm going to defer that to our virologist to answer from a perspective of the immune system over a lifespan.
Do you want to jump in on that one, Mujendra?
Yeah, I can. I'm agree with Dr. Thomas that I think once it is dependent, maybe, you know, younger kids is more susceptible because of vaccine, but after 21 year old, they could be. Am I right, Dr. Thomas?
I'm not sure this has been well studied. I'm not sure of research in this area. And another unknown is kind of the immune status of people who have contracted measles themselves, whether they may have been immune compromised, for example. We don't know that.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I saw the studies. Like they said, I didn't see the cases, but when I read the literature, they said it is immunocompromised because they affect memory cells, and especially memory cells that have long-lasting things.
Interesting. Do you think these more recent outbreaks will spur more study of measles and kind of awareness and kind of how that the virus has an impact on people and that sort of thing, especially with this newer generation of doctors who haven't seen as much measles? What do you think?
I'll share that Johns Hopkins University is doing a nationwide study right now and working with several health departments that have responded to the measles outbreaks that we're seeing in 2024. We're working with them and they're working with other health departments across the country to sort of identify best practices in a measles response. The measles virus itself hasn't changed over time. It's not mutating like we see with COVID, for example. And we have such a great vaccine. One dose is 93% effective and two doses are 97% effective. So we have the tools to prevent measles infections. I think the areas of research are trying to figure out what messaging will reach people in order to increase the uptake of the vaccine. And then also from a public health perspective, like I mentioned, that the response to an outbreak requires an extraordinary amount of resources. And so that's part of what Johns Hopkins is looking at, is how to make that response efficient when it needs to happen and how to set up sort of almost toolkits that can be used by health departments when this occurs. And I'll just share with you, for example, from those four cases of measles that we had in Miami County and Montgomery County, because it's so, measles is so contagious, there were over 1,000 people that were identified as contacts to measles. So that's a huge burden on health departments then to do that outreach to all of those contacts and to track, you know, their immunization status and provide information that they need about symptoms to monitor for in case they should develop measles. Mm-hmm. And so I would say probably less research about the measles virus and more research about outreach to populations and to increase that vaccination rate, and then how to put together an efficient response when we need one.
Yeah. So just bottom line, what is your best advice, Dr. Thomas, for how parents and other caregivers can best protect themselves, their children, and vulnerable family members from measles?
The great thing is that we have a vaccine that is clearly very, very effective. And the best thing that parents can do to protect their children is to make sure that they've received those two doses of measles vaccine at the appropriate ages. And if they have any questions about the safety of that, they should talk to their healthcare provider.
Okay. I've been talking with University of Dayton virologist Meerjendra Rajput and Public Health Dayton and Montgomery County Medical Director Dr. Becky Thomas. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Up next, we'll hear about two local art exhibitions that spotlight the work of women artists, past and present. This is Cincinnati Edition.